Again, we do want to welcome you this morning for being here with us and worshiping God with us here and worshiping Him together. So I want to start off with a kind of a question and answer. So I'm going to ask you a couple questions and hopefully you'll participate. It won't give away too much how old you are by the questions I'm going to ask, but I do hope that you do answer some of these questions. You know, I'll start off with myself on this one. What was the weirdest character you saw and TV when you were growing up? And I'm going to release my age here. Mine was Saving the Bell was the big show coming up. I know that puts me in the 30s, late 30s, now 36. But you had this show, Saving the Bell, and in this show you had, you know, the stud of the show, Slater, you know, which I can relate to a lot, to, you know, the muscles especially. You know, I saw him on TV. I was like, he looks like me. And then you had, of course, the popular kid, the blonde kid, anybody remember his name? Zach. All right, there we go, the 30-some-year-olds. And those who've seen the reruns knew that. Zach Morris, a cool dude. I mean, he was just the coolest, right? And then you had Lisa, cute little Lisa. And then you had the cheerleader, Kelly. Oh, yes. Yeah, Kelly. Marisa's in kids' church, so I can ponder a little bit. Yeah, Kelly, right? But then you had this one personality in this show. Who remembers the name? Screech, right? Screech. Weird Screech. All right, so that's my generation. I'm going to start off with the lower generation, the younger. What's the popular show going on right now? Teens? Don't tell me I have to name the show. Jesse. All right, the show Jesse. They don't watch TV? So you have this show, Jesse, who's supposed to be from Texas going to New York City and to change New York City. And there's a weird character in there. Anybody know the name? Boy, I chose the wrong one this morning. Rovi, the Indian guy, Rovi. He's just weird. All right, I'm going to go back to the older since I really want this participation. Older show. So if you're in your 40s and 50s, you know, not that you're old. That's not what I'm saying. But what was your show growing up? What was your show that had a weird guy in it? Gilligan. Happy Days. So let's start with Gilligan. Who was the weird guy there? Gilligan, yeah. You got to be weird when you're wearing that funny hat, you know? And then what was the other one? Happy Days. Who was the weird one there? Fonzie, the weird guy. What's that? Is weird and different. All right, for those of you who are older than that generation, remember back to the radio? Who was the weird? No, just kidding. I shouldn't have taken that cheap shot. I'm sorry. Here we go. Apologies even in public. Sorry. You've all been exposed to the weird person in a show, right? Well, this series that we're doing is about weird. And it's not about being the weird guy on TV. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about being weird in a God way, not in the weird of, man, I don't want to be like them or like her or like him, but rather, what does it mean to be weird in a very God way? And the title of this series is Weird, Because Normal Isn't Working. Because normal isn't working. And for many of you this morning, you've tried normal. You tried normal in your relationship with your spouse, and you just find out that it's just really not working. You know, you've tried normal, the way everybody else in this culture does relationships, and it didn't work out for you. Maybe you're in the dating scene, and you've tried normal, what everybody in this culture does, and you're realizing that normal isn't just working out just right. It's really not working out. Or maybe you've tried normal in your finances, what everybody else around you does, and you've realized that normal got you in debt. Or perhaps you've tried normal grieving the way the world grieves, and you find yourself still grieving after so many years of that loss, whether it was a loss of someone special or a loss of something, a situation that you had. So our basic assumption here this morning and over the course of the series is that all of us have tried normal at some point or another, and we've seen that normal doesn't quite work out the way we would imagine that it would work out. And our basic thought is this: if you want normal, what normal people have, do what normal people do. If you want what normal people have, do what normal people do. But if you want what few people have, you've got to do what few people do. Does that make sense? And last week, Charlie kicked off the series, and he used this passage, which is really the anchor passage for this whole series, and it's Matthew chapter 7, verse 13. I want you to go there. We're just going to revisit it just briefly. Matthew chapter 7, verse 13, this is Jesus talking. And I love this passage. It shows just such a great comparison here between two key thoughts. And it reads like this. It says, "Enter through the narrow gate, for wide is the gate and broad is the road that leads to destruction, and many enter through it." So just stop there for just a moment. So here's Jesus. He's talking with his disciples. He says, hey, listen, I'm going to show you two types of roads. And the first type of road is going to be the common road, the normal road. And this normal common road has a wide gate. A lot of people can enter through it. It says it's a broad gate. It's a big gate. It's a broad road. And a lot of people go into it. It reminds me, and it should remind you, being from Gonzales, of the whole cattle deal, right? You look out there, you see all these, you know, cows and bulls, and they're all together. And then, you know, the rancher opens the big gate, right? And he didn't even have to whistle, you know, opens the gate, and all of a sudden, all these cows and bulls and heifers, whatever they're called, you know, they just start going towards this gate, not because they think it's the good thing going on in there, but they just go because everybody else is going in there, and that's the normal thing to do. And then next thing you know, there's a steak in our plate, you know, that leads to their destruction. And they don't know this. They don't know they're going to end up in Whataburger with their cousins. And so they go into this gate thinking this is the greatest thing because they're being fed. And yet all the while, it's just destruction. Destruction. You know, you almost imagine that there would be one that would say, hey, dude, don't do it. Like, don't go in there. You know, you're going to be a steak one day. But nobody does that. Nobody does that. But that's the same thing that we do, because we take the path that everybody else is taking, and we, like the cows we see out there, are saying, you know what? Everybody's going that direction, so I'm going to go that direction as well. I'm going to do things the way normal people, quote, normal people do it in this world. And the end result, it says here, is what? Say it with me. Destruction. Say it with me again. Destruction. In other words, you've tried normal. We've tried normal. It didn't lead to a very happy life, did it? But I love how he compares it to verse 14. Look at verse 14. It says, "But small is the gate and narrow the road that leads to life. And only," say it with me, a few find it." It's saying, hey, listen, there's two roads. There's the normal road that everybody else takes in all these categories in your life, and it doesn't lead to happiness. And there's this narrow road with a very small gate, and very few people take it. And what does it lead to? Life, joy, peace. Oh, that this morning that we would see that and think, that's the road I want to take. Because it's okay to be different. It's okay to be different. And not only is it okay to be different, to be weird in a God way, but when the Spirit of God leads in your life, it's way better. It's way better. And our starting point this morning is this. Go to 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 16. This is our starting point. This is Peter citing an Old Testament passage, and it says, "Be holy because I am holy." And that's the starting point. Be holy because I am holy. And that's where we start off this morning. You might be here this morning thinking, Jesse, whoa, wait a minute. You know, hold your donkey or your horse or whatever. You know, hold it. I can't be holy because that's reserved for the priest. That's reserved for the preacher. That's reserved for the religious people. That's reserved for the people that have it together. I cannot be holy. And guess what? You're dead wrong. Let me give you the definition of holy. The word is hagios, which means to be pure, to be set apart, to be different. That's what it is to be holy, is to be different. If you pursue Christ with all of your heart, you will be different in a God way. You will be weird. And the goal, folks, is not to be weird. The goal is to chase after Christ. And the outcome of that is you just end up being different, weird, holy. And I want you to remember, there is no cookie cutter weird. There's only God's custom. There's only God's custom weird. And maybe for some of you, it means that you no longer go to the parties that you once used to go and all the beer was flowing. Maybe for some of you, it means there's no more hanky-panky, you know, with the girlfriend. Or, you know, you're like, oh, wait a minute. What does it mean to be different? Maybe for some of you, it means that you live simply and are generous. You live simply and you give extravagantly. For some of you, it might be that you walk away from Facebook gossip. How many shoes did I step in there? Facebook gossip, right? It's okay, you know, to talk about stuff if it's on Facebook. That's not gossip, right? Maybe it is. And maybe your track to weirdness is to say, I'm not going to engage in the gossip that's going on in Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, whatever it may be. Maybe you're weird this morning is that you start for the first time praying over your meal. Maybe it's that you move out of the boyfriend's house or girlfriend's house. Maybe that would be your weird. When God directs and leads you, your weird is going to be different than the weird of the next person next to you. And it's time to take the wide road out the window. It's time to say, I won't take the wide road. I'm going to take the narrow road. And that might mean for many of us that we might be slapped in the face. Maybe not literally, but figuratively. I want to take you to Psalm chapter 69, verse 9. Psalm 69, verse 9, because David understood exactly what that meant. He understood what it meant when you took the narrow road, what that may lead to. So go to Psalm verse 69. This is David talking. And it says, David is talking to God at this point, and he's saying this. It says, passion for your house has consumed me. Pause there for just a moment. The house of God was, in the Old Testament, was where the very presence of God resided. And so what he's saying is, I am consumed by the fact that I want to be in your presence. But see the results. And the insults of those who insult you have fallen on me. So he's saying, hey, listen, I am consumed by the fact that I want to draw close to you. I want to be in your presence. But as I'm drawing close to your presence, I'm beginning to receive what you receive, which was insults. And those insults of people around me, they're coming to me now. That's what he's saying. Isn't that interesting that when we try and chase after Christ, that's when people start giving us the stiff arm or insulting us? Verse 10. When I weep and fast, they scoff at me. When I dress in burlap to show sorrow, they make fun of me. It's like they even make fun of the way I dress. Verse 12, I am the favorite topic of Facebook gossip. Oh, no, wait a minute. Twitter gossip. No. Town gossip. You know, in Gonzales, we should know this like really clearly, right? Like, that's why in our small groups, we tell people this is the Vegas rule. Like, whatever gets shared here stays here, because we know it's a small town, and we know that if we, you know, put out our dirty laundry, that it might come out. And that's why we're very protective in our small groups to do that, because we understand this. It says, I'm the favorite topic of town gossip, and all the drunks, even those who are not living their life straight, and all the drunks sing about me. Like, even they're making fun of me. They're going to the turnaround and making fun of me. I'm trying to chase after God and his presence, but it's not going too well. It's like crabs. Have you ever seen or experienced crabs, you know? Like, you put a 5-gallon bucket and you put crabs in there. Have you noticed that crabs, I mean, they do good by themselves, but when you add them together, like, they start dragging each other down, right? They start like, oh, no, you're not going to leave this one. Like, if you leave, I'm going to cling to your foot, and I'm going to leave, too, this bucket. And that's what happens. That's somewhat the description that he's giving here. He's saying, hey, listen, as I'm chasing it after God's presence, I'm being drugged down. And there's two barriers in this passage on the road to weird, two barriers that keep us from experiencing life, from headed towards the weird road. And the first barrier is this, the inward pressure, which is the need to please. The need to please. That's the inward pressure. We see it in this passage. If we go back to it, he says, I'm consumed by your presence. But as soon as he gets consumed by God's presence and he wants to be there, he starts noticing people and the insults of people towards him. And that's the need to please, isn't it? It's noticing maybe a little bit too much what people are saying about you. And that's what happens here. Have you ever been there where you're thinking, what would people think? WWPT. What would people think? And so you decide one night, you're like, you know what? Instead of having 10 credit cards, I'm just going to narrow it down to one or two. But then inside your head, you're like, man, what would people think? Or maybe you decide, man, I want to minister to the foster kids. But man, wait a minute. What would people think? Or maybe for you men here, it's locking your browser from your smartphone. In other words, you don't have access to your browser because you know that it leads to bad things, you know, in your life. But then you think to yourself, but then again, what would people think if they saw that my smartphone is not that smart and doesn't even have a browser because it's locked? Or ladies, maybe it's like saying to your girlfriends that when you hang out with them, you just end up shopping galore. And you're like, man, I spent money I didn't even have. But then you're like, well, I cannot not go with her because what would people think? You see, when we become obsessed with what people think, we forget about what God thinks. That's what happens. When we become obsessed about what people think, we forget what actually God thinks. Let me give you an example. I want you to go to 1 Samuel chapter 15, verse 24. 1 Samuel chapter 15, verse 24. If you know the story, Samuel is the first king of Israel, and he has a whole nation before him. He's selected by God. And he's got somebody trailing behind him, going up in the ladder, which is future King David. And along the way, he gets really jealous, and he starts doing a lot of dumb things. One of which is God tells him to go to a certain land and to conquer it, and God gives him real specific instructions. And when he gets out of that land, he doesn't do all the specific instructions that God called him to do. And the prophet of the day calls him out on it. And that's where we pick up in verse 24. 1 Samuel 15, 24. It says, Saul is the king. Samuel is the prophet. Then Saul said to Samuel, I have sinned. I violated the Lord's command and your instructions. And listen to what he says. I was afraid of the people. And so I gave in to them. He says, I was afraid. I cared too much about what people thought, and I gave in to what they wanted me to do. See, that's that barrier, the inward pressure, the need to please. We all have it. We have this natural propensity to want to please other people. We have it. King Solomon, who would follow King David, put it this way in Proverbs 29:25. It said, fear of man will prove to be a snare, but whoever trusts in the Lord is kept safe. Now, as you look at that passage, I want you to circle the word snare. That's a word that used to be used of a metal object, a circular metal object, a ring that used to be put on the nose of the animal. And the purpose of that ring on the nose of the animal was so that its owner could grab that animal by the ring and lead it, because it's very uncomfortable. How would you like it if you had a ring in your nose, teenagers, and your parents were like, oh, you come over here? Or kids, you know, it wouldn't be too fun, right? Well, it's not fun for animals either. But they would use it to lead that animal with very little resistance. And what he's saying here is real simple. He's saying fear of man will prove to be a snare. In other words, if you're looking to please man, wherever the normal that people want to lead you into, they're going to drag you right into it. Because that's going to be the path of least resistance. But notice the contrast. But whoever trusts in the Lord is kept safe. In other words, if you allow God to be the one that leads you, it's going to be a way different story for you. But it's this natural sense, inward pressure of wanting to please. So what does that mean if you're in a family? You got to teach your kids to be okay with different. That's what he means. And not just be okay with different, but being okay with by being led by the Spirit of God, because weird is better, because it's better. But in order to do that, you have to create this strong family identity. So when the peer pressure begins to mount on our kids, they can say, no, no, no. When somebody tries to drag them by that nose ring, they're like, no way, I'm not going to do that. You know, in our own household, we pound this to our kids. We have four kids, and we pound it in their heads. Elizondos are honest, they work hard, and they're devoted to God no matter what. In other words, we follow God no matter the cost. And every opportunity that we get to teach him those family values, we teach him those family values, because we understand that one day the pressures around them will be so great and their natural inclination will be to do what pleases the normal. We want them to be able to stop. When our two young boys, Caleb and Nemi, one day become teenagers and everybody in their school, they're having sex, that they would be able to say, wait a minute, I'm going to save myself. And I know that's weird, and I know I might even be called, quote, gay, but I'm going to be the weird one here and do what is not normal and do what is weird. I'm hoping that my two daughters, one day, when they start dating at 40, like, because it's not going to happen before then. I know. It's not going to happen way before. I'm already... two girls, oh my goodness. But when my daughters, my hope and desire would be that they would say, choose their own weird, and that one day they would say, I'm not going to date until I'm my late teens. Oh my goodness, I said it. Late teens, early 20s, 40s, 50s, or whatever. You know, it's all the same. So whenever they decide that they're going to date and the world around them, both of them say, you're not dating, girlfriend? What's the matter with you? That they're able to say, wait a minute. I'm chasing after the weird. And not even after the weird. I'm chasing after God. And those things will come in their own time and space. But that they would have enough strength to be able to say, I'm not going to go there. Instead of trying to please their girlfriends and say, I'm going to do it because so-and-so did it. And I'm going to start dating at nine because the neighbor did it or whatever, you know. Like, no, no, no. Like, you got to build these strong family values so that one day they can do the weird road and not the broad road. The second barrier is this, and that's the outward pressure. Just like there's inward pressure, there's also outward pressure. And it's the reality of criticism. It's the reality of criticism. Boy, criticism is real, isn't it? David saw it. We saw it in the psalm when he said, you know, here I am trying to chase after God's presence, and as a result, what I get is criticism. People are talking about me. I'm part of their gossip. I'm part of their, you know, even the drunkards are gossiping about me. They're mocking me. They're laughing about me for choosing the narrow road. And that's just a reality that when you live the God kind of weird, you will have criticism. For some of you, it's the fact that you're here. Like you, the first time that you're being regular church attenders and you're like, man, Jesse, have you understood? My cousins are making fun of me for coming to church. Welcome. For some of you, it might be that you pray for the first time. You went out on a limb and you said, let's pray. And you prayed and you didn't know how to pray. So you just said something like, rub-a-dub-dub, thank you for this grub. And your sister-in-law was laughing it up. And you're like, man, they just criticized me. Maybe for some of you this weekend, you were offered a little weed. And your buddy said, hey, man, you want some, dude? I don't know why he has that accent, but that's all I can do. Bear with me. That's all I can do, guys, you know? Bear with me. Marisa's the one that can do all the accents. But they offer the weed, you know? And you're like, well, no, I'm not going to do that stuff anymore because I'm chasing after Christ, not after the weed. And they're like, dude, you know? Forget that one. I tried it. I had it in my notes. But, well. But maybe they're saying, well, you think you're better than me? You think you're better than me? See, outward criticism. I want you to listen to what Jesus said about outward criticism in John chapter 15, verse 18. John chapter 15, verse 18. Go there with me. It's fascinating what he says about this. He says, if the world hates you, keep in mind that it hated me first. If you belong to the world, it would love you as its own. It said, hey, if your citizenship was of this world, it would love you. As it is, you do not belong to this world. This is not your world. This is not your home. Heaven is. One day the new earth. It says, that is why the world hates you. It hates you because you're not from here. Because you're weird. It's all right to be weird. Verse 20. If they persecuted me, or you could put in there the word, if they criticized me, they will persecute you also. They will criticize you also. It's about finding comfort in persecution, right? It's about finding comfort in criticism. Being strangely at home when you're criticized. What if you left this morning and you didn't care what people thought about you? What if you left this morning and you didn't care what people thought about the way you managed your money? Particularly for those of you who give 10% and above. What if you didn't care that people are making fun of you for giving to the kingdom of God and you said, I don't care. I'm going to give generously. I'm going to save and give generously. And you didn't care about the criticism. What if you didn't care about what you wore as to try to fit in? What if during Christmas time, you didn't care that you were buying the cheapo gifts because that's all you really could afford and otherwise you'd be using all those credit cards? What if you didn't care what kind of size of house you had or what kind of car you rode? What kind of horse you rode. When you follow Christ fully, you will be criticized. You will be persecuted. And I'm not too concerned of being criticized. I'm just being honest with you. I'm not too concerned about being criticized or persecuted. What worries me is when I'm not being criticized or persecuted. That's when we should be worried. Because when that happens, we may just be in the very broad road with the big gate. And nobody's criticizing because you're going their way anyway. It might be too normal if we're not being persecuted or criticized. I want you to notice what Jesus also said in Matthew chapter 5, verse 10. Matthew chapter 5, verse 10. Go there with me. He starts off with the word blessed. The word blessed, you can translate it as happy. Blessed are those, and notice the irony, by the way. Blessed or happy are those who are persecuted. Whoa, wait a minute. That doesn't make sense, does it? When I get criticized or persecuted, I'm not like, yeah, man, I took one for the team. Like, woohoo, I don't do that. Because that's not natural. But look at what he's saying is, blessed are those who are persecuted. Why? Because of righteousness. It doesn't say because of doing the dumb thing, you know. It doesn't say, you know, it says when you do what is righteous and you get criticized or persecuted, you're a blessed person. You ought to be happy. For theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. Rejoice and be glad, because great is your reward in heaven. It says when you get persecuted or criticized because of me, not because of the things, choices you've made, but because of Jesus Christ, you should be glad, because there's a reward that's coming. It might not be in this timeline. It's probably in heaven. And here it says, you know, it's the reward in heaven. It's going to come, a reward. Criticism. This is the bottom line. This is the bottom line. I can't please everyone, but I can please God. I can't please everyone, but I can please God. I want you to go to 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 4. This is Paul talking to the Thessalonican church. And notice what he says. He says, for we speak as messengers approved by God to be entrusted with the good news. Our purpose is to please God, not people. Do you notice that? That his purpose, our purpose is to please God, not people. In life and in leadership, all the great ones in life and leadership were weird. We're criticized at some point. We're persecuted. Think about Jesus. Persecuted, criticized for eating with the sinners. Healing on the Sabbath and where everybody rested, he was healing, persecuted. Look what Edward T. Welch said. He said, most are more concerned with looking stupid than we are with acting sinfully. Isn't that the truth? We can't have it both ways. We can't chase after people pleasing and chase after God being pleased with us. In Galatians chapter 1, verse 10, it says, Paul is saying, am I not trying to win the approval of men or of God? Or am I trying to please men? If I were still trying to please men, I would not. Notice that word. I would not be a servant of Christ. So what Paul is saying is, if I'm trying to please man and people and go through this broad road with a big gate, I can't please God. It's incompatible. You can't seek the pleasure of people and yet at the same time think that God is pleased with us. That's what, you can't be a servant of God and yet also be a servant of man. It doesn't make sense, folks. It's one or the other. There's no half gate. You know, there's no cow that's walking in with straddling the gate like, man, I might go in here and go to a McDonald's, you know, or I might not go there. They're not straddling a fence. Either they go in or they don't. And the same thing in life. Either we take the big gate, normal, or we take the weird gate, the uncommon. I want to end with this passage because I think this passage explains why we have a tendency to seek out people pleasing versus pleasing God. And I'm going to end with this passage in verse 42 of John chapter 12. John 12, 42. It says, yet at the same time, many even among the leaders believed in him. This is Jesus. But because of the Pharisees, they would not confess their faith for fear that they would be put out of the synagogue. So he's saying, you know, there was a lot of people during Jesus' time or after the resurrection that were putting their faith in Jesus, but they were kind of too scared to say anything. They were too scared of the teachers of the law at the time. Verse 43, for this is the reason, for they loved praise from men more than praise from God. Like at the end of the day, the reason we go into the narrow road, the normal, the broad road, the normal, versus the narrow road, the weird, is because, very simple, we're seeking the people-pleasing. versus pleasing God. They love praise from men more than praise from God. That we would be a generation here in this church, in this city. Oh, that we would be that generation that would say, I'm going to seek God's pleasure no matter the cost. No matter the cost. No matter the cost. Versus being the kind of people that say, you know what, I'm just going to go with the flow. I'm not going to rock any boat. I'm just going to do what's normal, what's expected of me. And people are going to be so glad. I'm going to be besties with a lot of people. And miss out. Miss out on the life that God wants for us. Because one leads to destruction, to pain, and the other one leads to life. And many of us here this morning, we're missing out. We're missing out. Because if we're honest with each other, you're seeking the pleasure of the people around you and not the pleasure of God. Let's pray.